A recent DVD release of an imported British drama has all the features of an easily promotable teen movie. It's loaded with sex and violence, it's loaded with tales of epic battles and sinister intrigue, and even the most powerful characters are in danger of being killed at any time. But, says TV critic David Bianculli, this is no new action feature for the younger set, this is a very mature drama for very mature adults. It's a reissue of a miniseries that was shown on PBS 35 years ago. It's I, Claudius, starring Derek Jacobi as the most unlikely of Roman emperors.
I, Claudius came to American television, imported from the BBC, in 1977, the same year as another ambitious long-form production, ABC's Roots, which proved to everyone that miniseries were an exciting and extremely popular new form of television. Of course, I, Claudius, shown on the PBS series Masterpiece Theater, didn't get anything close to the audience that Roots did, but it sure got a lot of attention. And a few years later, when the ABC primetime soap opera Dynasty was launched, its creators admitted openly that what they had in mind was a modern-day I, Claudius. The original I, Claudius, based on the novel by Robert Graves, covers the reigns of several Roman emperors: Augustus, Tiberius, the famously twisted Caligula, and the stuttering, limping Claudius, who narrates the entire tale, reading from his own history. "I am not yet born," he says as the TV drama begins, "but I will be, soon." The miniseries boasts impressive performances from several key British actors. Patrick Stewart, long before Star Trek The Next Generation, shows up here. So does John Hurt as a memorably unhinged Caligula. And the women, including Sean Phillips as Livia and Sheila White as Messalina, are deadlier and even more fascinating than the males. Except, that is, for Claudius. Played by Derek Jacobi, it's a performance that spans wide-eyed youth and weary old age. At first, while everyone in Rome is falling victim to the treachery of others, he survives, mostly because he's dismissed as a stuttering idiot. Well, he stutters, but he's no idiot. And the older he gets, and the more Roman purges he survives, the wiser he is at self-preservation. Once the obviously insane Emperor Caligula has declared himself a god, for example, the wrong utterance in conversation with him can lead to instant death. But Claudius, despite his stutter, manages to use his wits quickly enough to survive. Here are John Hurt as Caligula and Derek Jacobi in the role that made him a star as Claudius. Caligula begins by asking Claudius a seemingly simple question.
How many hours a night do you sleep?
Sleep? 8 or 9, I suppose.
Well, I sleep barely 3.
Do gods need more?
You think I'm mad?
Mad?
Yes, so sometimes I think that I'm going mad. I mean, be honest with me. Has that thought ever crossed your mind?
Never. Never. Well, the idea is preposterous. You set the standard of sanity for the whole world.
Why is there all this galloping in my head, and why do I sleep so little?
Well, it's your mortal disguise. You see, the physical body is a great strain, if you're not used to it, which a god isn't. Explains, too, I think, 3 hours sleep. You see, undisguised gods ever sleep at all.
You're probably right. But then if I'm a god, which of course I am, then why didn't I think of that?
Revisiting I, Claudius after so many years is quite a treat. It's a strong reminder of how literate and ambitious the miniseries form used to be, and how much we've lost by its overall disappearance. Except that, like so many other entertainment forms, the miniseries hasn't so much gone extinct as been absorbed. It's alive and well in season-long storylines on Showtime's Homeland and Dexter, and on the lengthy narratives of AMC's Mad Men and Breaking Bad. But on television, the extended, complicated narrative began in such productions as I, Claudius. The new DVD box set from Acorn presents this beautifully, and even includes a bonus feature that, to me, is alone worth the purchase price. It's a full-length documentary from 1967 about an unfinished attempt to film I, Claudius way back in 1937. The documentary is called The Epic That Never Was, and you may have seen it on public TV several decades ago. I did, and never forgot it. It's got all the surviving footage of the aborted I, Claudius, filmed by Joseph von Sternberg, and starring Charles Laughton in the title role. Laughton was amazing, and you can tell that from even a brief taste.
Claudius will tell you how to frame your laws. Profiteering and bribery will stop. This Senate will function only in the name of Roman justice, and all of you who have acquired office dishonestly will be replaced by men who love Rome better than their purses.
How wonderful is that? And how wonderful is this 35th anniversary I, Claudius set? Not only do you get one fantastic Claudius to enjoy, you get two.
David Bianculli is founder and editor of the website TV Worth Watching and teaches TV and film history at Rowan University in New Jersey. He reviewed the 35th anniversary DVD edition of I, Claudius.
As fans celebrate the first weeks of baseball season, there's a new reality show hoping to win over sports fans. Ball Boys is set in a sports memorabilia shop called Robbie's First Base. The cast includes the father and son who own the shop and two employees. On the show, the guys, what do you think they do? They talk about sports. And they get the occasional visit from legendary athletes like Pete Rose and football legend Jim Brown. Here's a clip from when Jim Brown came into the shop to verify his signature on a helmet.
Jim, the reason I brought you in today, I want you to tell me if this is, in fact, your signature.
All right. When you look at the Brown.
Okay.
And you look at the N. That N on Brown. Only one person on this earth can write it that way. That's me.
I'm satisfied.
So you buy it.
All righty.
Somehow or another, we managed to get the whole cast on the program today. Ball Boys are father and son owners Robbie Davis Sr. and Robbie Davis Jr. Robbie Davis Sr. is here with me in our Washington, D.C. studio, along with Robbie, Shaggy, Ryer.
You got it.
And in Towson, Maryland, Robbie Davis Jr. and Louis Sweet Lou Brown. Do I have it all?
There you go.
The third. I'm already behind the eight ball. So three Robbies.
Yeah, and that's why Robbie Ryer is Shaggy, so not to confuse the audience, because there would be three Robbies.
So how did this all start? So
call me Senior.
Senior. I'll call you Senior.
Two years ago, we got a phone call out of the blue from Left Field Pictures, who has the leading show, reality show called Pawn Stars. Everybody knows that. They called us.
Just to clarify, Pawn as in P-A-W-N. I just want to be clear about what kind of program
my
we're
enunciation,
talking about.
Pawn Stars.
Okay.
And they said they wanted to do a reality show similar to theirs, only with sports memorabilia. Would we be interested? And of course we said yes. I mean, who wouldn't want to be on a television show? And we moved forward a year later. We get a phone call from them, and they said, Junior, are you guys sitting down? And said, yeah. Said, ABC is going to do the show. And of course we were elated. I mean, and we can't thank ABC enough. And they said, we're going to do the show. ABC is going to come in. They came in early August, and they shot 12 shows with us to make a whole season one of Ball Boys.
Oh, well, I think you can thank them by getting some ratings. So I think, you know, I think that'll do.
We're working on it.
All right, Mr. Davis Jr., how did the whole sports memorabilia thing get started?
Well, I mean, my dad and I have been collecting cards over the years since I was a kid. You know, I've been doing the baseball card thing as most kids did my age. And as the years went by, we always had close relationships with athletes. My dad was in the card business. A lot of ball players did the advertising for him, namely Eddie Murray, Brooks Robinson, and Fred Lynn. And I was always around those guys at an early age, even to the point where, I always had autographs for those guys then, but never really appreciated what I had because they were just my dad's friends. They were people that were just around all the time. As the years went by, the baseball card industry changed. When we first opened up our business in 1989, it was pretty much strictly baseball cards. That's how we met Shaggy and Sweet Lou, actually. They came in as customers collecting baseball cards before they were employees. And as the years went by, when the baseball cards kind of went by the wayside, the autograph memorabilia, things that we had actually had, you know, from years past, started to be in what people were interested in. So it was natural. You know, we had the avenues to be able to get the sports memorabilia because we knew the athletes, and now it was something that people really wanted. Back before, you know, people would get autographs of people, but it wasn't really a big deal. You know, a kid in the 60s or 70s would get an autographed football of his favorite player and then go back and go out in the backyard and play with it. Same thing with baseball. They get autographs of these guys, and they go in the yard and play with it like kids do. And probably, I'd say sometime in the mid-90s is when it really became a business where people were going after these autographs, you know, saving them or trying to resell them, whatever it was. But it was something that people looked at as an investment more so than just something just to have.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm talking with the cast of the new ABC reality show, Ball Boys. Shaggy, Mr. Davis Jr. said that you guys were customers. You and Sweet Lou were customers. You kind of hung out there, right?
Yeah, we definitely did. I mean,
what do you like about it?
You talk sports to your best friends all day. I mean, that's a pretty awesome job.
You Lou pay and I, these guys for that?
Well, you know, very little, very
not
little.
Much. Yeah, not
very
much. Little. But you know what's really, really cool about it, and as he was alluding to, I've known them since they were 8 or 9 years old. They've been coming in and collecting
cards. You
know
me cards. Since I was 6. I was a little kid. There was a grocery store behind the store back then, and my mom would go grocery shopping, and I'd come in the store and buy packs of cards and whatnot. I was like kindergarten.
And now he's in his 20s, and what's really, really cool is that we do argue about things, sports things, all the time in the show, and we really do it in the store. And
no, I'm shocked by this.
And the reason I do it is because when kids grow up, they go away from home, and that you don't have them anymore. Well, I get to be with these kids, and I'm telling them right now, I love being with them, and I get to be with them every day. And I don't know what young people talk about, but as soon as something happens with a ball player that they know, one of the young guys, and he does something good, because on ESPN, you see it all the time, they do something good, and they'll say how great he was, I'll get the banter going because I'll interject Willie Mays or Michael Jordan or somebody that is going to be opposite to them. And that just excites me, and that's where we get the banter from, and we do it all the time. I
all the time,
Zena.
You do it all the time.
Because I tell them my athletes are better.
Sweet Lou, I got to get you in there. So what do you like about it?
Everything. I mean, I was going in there when I was real little, and I remember a time I didn't have enough money, and I wanted a Barry Bonds baseball. So my mom didn't have the money to give it to me. So we go in the store, and I was talking to Senior, and I was talking to Robbie Jr. And Robbie Sr. says, you know what? Just take it. When you get money, come back and pay me however long it takes. It didn't matter to him. He just wanted me to have it because he knew how special it was. So I think it was maybe like a couple days later, my mom was like, well, I'm going to go to the store and pay for it. She wouldn't take me again because then I was going to try to buy another baseball because I would spend all my money. I'd work in my mom's basement just to go buy like a Marcus Allen mini helmet of the Raiders. I did anything just to get memorabilia. But
what's the Mr. Davis Sr., what's the most, I don't know, exciting thing that's come into the store?
It's Babe Ruth, because everybody knows who Babe Ruth is. He's an icon. So whenever I get anything autographed by Babe Ruth, and years back I got a baseball autographed by Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig, someone had it and wanted to sell it, and I knew someone in Los Angeles who was looking for that kind of baseball, and I put them together. And that's the cool thing about what we do and the internet, because you can do those kind of things. You can make a deal from Washington to Los Angeles, and that's what I did. And that was really kind of cool, because you touch a moment in history when you touch something signed by those two guys.
Mr. Davis, I wanted to ask you, what is it you think people are interested in watching this? Because it's not like, forgive me, guys, you know I love y'all, but it's not like there's a dearth of sports talk out there. You know, there's radio, what? There's ESPN, it's all the time. What is it you think people are interested in with this?
I think why people are interested is because it's something you could legitimately have. You know, somebody could legitimately have an autographed baseball or football or, you know, just be sitting in their basement under their bed, whatever it is, and wonder what in the world it's worth and how to sell it. So to have a TV show where you can kind of get an idea of what you have and how special it is and how valuable it might be, it's totally interesting.
Shaggy, I was asking you this question too, because, you know, a lot of people think that young guys like yourself are the ones that advertisers are trying to reach, because they don't really watch TV. They don't really care about scripted programs. Well, I mean, they'll maybe watch sports. They'll listen to music on their mobile devices and whatever.
That's true.
So do you think? You think guys your age would want to watch this, and why?
Absolutely. Because you get the knowledge of the memorabilia, prices and stuff. You also get the history of the players, and you really get that family and friends feel of your buddies just chilling and arguing sports. And that's not, you know, when you have these roundtable discussions on ESPN and stuff like that, that's fantastic, and that's a formula that's worked for forever. But this is totally different because it's just completely just laid back, exactly as you are. There's no suit and tie. You're not coming into the studio at a certain
time. I don't
know.
You all are pretty well dressed. You're looking kind of hot. I assume you dressed up for me. Let me ask you this question here, because you're in Baltimore, so you can't grab me. So has anybody ever gotten Mr. Davis Sr.? Has anybody ever shut him down? Because it seems to me that he kind of has an answer for everything. And so,
honestly, I'm not even lying, I have never seen it. I have never seen it. I even tried to get him down because I know what he does, and it still won't work.
He's correct. I was wrong once.
but forget when it was.
None of us can remember.
No. Was I alive?
All right.
You were alive.
Okay. Well, it's good to see you all here. I'm surprised I was actually able to peel you away from the store for long enough to get you all in one room, even though you're actually in two different studios. And that's because, Mr. Davis Sr.,
we have to run a business. Right. I mean, and
so that's for real. This is not made up. This is not, for the Gareth. Yeah, this is a real shop.
We honestly do run a business. Yeah. If you come there, the way you see us now is exactly how we are at the store. I mean, I can't see people not liking us because we're real. the image we project on camera is exactly how we are.
Robbie Davis Sr., Robbie Davis Jr., Robbie Shaggy Ryer, and Louis Sweet Lou Brown III are stars of the new ABC show Ball Boys.
We are the Ball Boys.
Junior and Lou joined us from member station WTMD in Towson, Maryland. Senior and Shaggy were kind enough to join us in our Washington, D.C. studios. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you could eliminate a single word from the English language, just zap it, nuke it, prevent it from ever being used again, what would it be? That's the question that Ben Greenman of The New Yorker put to readers last week in the Culture Desk blog. And wow, the response was awesome. And Ben, that word that I just used, awesome, was slated by, I gather, a bunch of readers for elimination.
Yeah, people hated it. And you should be ashamed that you just used it.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I'm sure many words that were marked for death will come up again during our conversation, because many were very popular words.
And would a lot of them fall into that category of maybe things that teens tend to say a lot of?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because we did detect some reverse ageism. People didn't like, used as a sort of stopgap. Dude, people didn't like dude. The contest started basically because we counted all the words in the language and we found that there was one too many.
I see. So you wanted to figure out which one that was.
Yeah, exactly. There was one extra one. And rather than just arbitrarily decide on our own which one to knock out, we decided we would appeal to our very well-informed and language-obsessed readers. It wasn't ever intended to be a popular vote. We were taking nominations, after which we would go into the smoky back room and pick a winner.
Okay. Well, I think there would be one category, which is ugly words, just words that sound nasty. What were some of those?
Phlegm. Mm. The word that came up the most was moist. People hate the word moist.
What is it with that? I don't understand. Why is moist so widely hated?
I don't know. I said in the roundup that without the word, it would leave bakers, meteorologists, and amateur pornographers lacking for what to do. But I think it's the texture of the word.
Okay, Ben. Well, let's end the suspense here. The winner, wait for it. The winner of the word that should be eliminated from the English language, Ben Greenman, is?
Slacks.
Slacks.
Slacks. And the more that word stayed on the table, the more preposterous it seemed. Because there's lots of other words for it. It's sort of, in our mind, stuck in time, maybe 78, 79. And the texture of that word also is terrible. People said it felt like rubbing the palm of their hand over polyester to say that word out loud. It's gone, by the way.
And what does that mean, to be gone?
It's gone. It doesn't exist any longer anywhere.
That's the power of the New Yorker right
there. It's gone.
And what does the winner get who submitted slacks as the word to eliminate?
We decided in the end that we were going to have someone from our esteemed copy department write the word down on a piece of paper, crumple it up, and throw it away. So it's a sort of ceremonial sacrifice of that word. And then I think probably next week we're going to have people eliminate a number.
Any bets on which the most reviled number will be?
I really don't know. 11 and 17's not that. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Ben Greenman with The New Yorker, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
The stars of Latin American music were in the Miami area last night for the 2012 Billboard Latin Music Awards. We've been previewing the awards all week with Jasmine Garz. She's the co-host of NPR's Alt Latino podcast. Now it's time for a review. Jasmine's in the studio once again after watching, what was it, 5 hours?
It certainly felt like it.
Was it five?
No, I don't think it was five, but it definitely felt like an all-nighter.
So who were the big winners?
Definitely the big winners were Dominican American star Prince Royce, reggaeton artist Don Omar, and Marc Anthony, who got a Hall of Fame award, Salón de la Fama.
Hall of Fame? Yeah. Isn't that kind of like a career achievement thing? I mean, he's not done
yet. He did at one point say, hey, guys, I still have a lot to give. But he's so great. I love Marc Anthony. And he gives such a passionate, emotional acceptance speech. And he said something very poignant, which, you know, everyone gets up here and talks about the sacrifices they've made. But my family and friends have made a lot of sacrifices so that I can be a musician and a performer.
That's a great message. Oh, well, good. All right. Well, you mentioned Don Omar, and you said he won big, and I think he won what?
Song of the Year.
Song of the Year.
Among other awards for Danza Kuduro.
All right. Let's listen to a little bit. Good song for summer coming up. We played a lot of parties. Okay, what about something from Prince Royce?
The great thing about Prince Royce is last year he won Best New Artist, and he's really been able to carry that momentum. And he won a Songwriter Award, Album of the Year, Tropical Songs Artist. He does that kind of bachata style. Bachata, by the way, is that very romantic sound that you hear, very tragic lyrics with those guitar plucks. And a lot of artists nowadays are mixing it with R&B. And here is Soy Incondicional. Soy Incondicional. Un amor tan real. Que no busca, que sueña, que sufre y perdona. Un amor de verdad. Now, Jazz, we can't talk about an awards show without talking about the snubs. Did anybody kind of get the cold shoulder that... embarrassing as it is, we probably should talk about. I felt like Romeo Santos got ignored. I loved his new album. I thought this was his year, and he didn't get the acknowledgement I felt he deserved.
Did he get anything?
No. Prince Royce stole the show as far as bachata is concerned. And Prince Royce is great, but I think Romeo Santos deserves some more acknowledgement.
What about J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez? She's one of the artists that you spotlighted earlier in the week. How did she do?
If you were betting on horses, I would have gotten you into deep trouble. Shakira, again, Shakira stole the show. Shakira got 4 awards. And
shut J-Lo out, essentially.
Yeah, they were head-to-head in most categories. Yeah, I still think that J-Lo, it was a big year for her, and I don't know. I'm sticking to my choices of who I thought was just great this year.
Okay. What about new artists? Is there anybody throwing down the marker or somebody to watch in the future in the way that Prince Royce was last year?
Sure. I feel like the Billboard Awards aren't exactly a great place to find new artists because it's all about who is commercially successful. And it does feel a lot like the big names club. La Adictiva Banda San José de Mesillas from Mexico, they won Best New Artists. I really think the spotlight for a newer artist was on Michel Telon, who is a Brazilian act. They became huge with the song Ai Seu Te Pego. This was a viral hit. Over 400 million watched, the most watched video in the history of Brazil. And it's that song that all the footballers are singing and dancing on the football field. And here is Ai Seu Te Pego.
Okay, well, we'll go out on that. Jasmine Garz is co-host of NPR's Alt Latino podcast. She's been joining me all week to talk about the Billboard Latin Music Awards, and she gave us a review of the awards ceremony, which was Thursday night. Jazz, thank you.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun. A galera começou a dançar.
coragem e comecei a falar.